So, warm and metta-filled greetings, everyone. Good to see you. Good to be with you. Good to practice together. Good to be in this field together, even though we're not together in space, but in different places in the world, yet together. It's a new meaning of togetherness, connected in this web of practice. So according to conventional time, we are halfway through our retreat together. And it's Wednesday. I say this because it's so easy to lose track of time. If I had a quarter for every time I've lost track of days of the week on retreat. And to say that it's Wednesday, that might bring up different thoughts, reflections for folks. It might be like, oh, thank God, we're halfway through already. Or it might be, oh, no, we're halfway through already. I'm just getting started. This mind is just starting to land and it's delicious and I don't want it to end and start to grieve already. And yet, it's just Wednesday. That's all. It's Wednesday. So I was reflecting on it being Wednesday halfway. I was reminded of this invitation. To practice as if your hair is on fire. To practice as if your hair is on fire. And I'm forgetting the reference, so forgive me. I'll just offer it as the invitation. And I remember this being really important to me in my practice for a long time. Practicing as if my hair was on fire with this sense of urgency, this sense of samvega, spiritual urgency, samvega, the term in Pali, in the language of the Buddha. So I was thinking of that today as I was reflecting on sharing and speaking with you. And then I thought, wait a minute, is that a good metaphor to bring up for a metta retreat? This sense of, my hair is on fire. And I thought, oh, yes. And I started to see it in a completely new light that I want to share with you, offer to you, which is, if my hair was on fire, I would want to jump into a cool pool of water, right? To put the fire out. And guess what is that cool pool of water? Soothing, healing, puts out the fires, metta. So please practice like your hair's on fire with this desire, urgency, beauty for water, the healing waters of metta. So now that's a different way to think about this practicing as if your hair is on fire. So metta and wisdom, the theme that we're swimming in, practicing with together, inclining our mind towards. So today I'd like to say a little bit about metta and wisdom, their interconnection. Say a little more. We've been saying it in so many different ways through this retreat. So yes, this is a metta retreat, but it's also a bit wisdom retreat in some ways, bringing wisdom in. And also, I want to say some things about all the Brahma Viharas, the other Brahma Viharas, because they're all interrelated. They're all interrelated, and invite some flexibility as you notice in your practice going in between them, not as a mistake or as a problem, but as skillful transitions. So that's the agenda for this talk. So metta and wisdom. So I'll start by saying the obvious, that some of you have also noted and said practice meetings that, oh, the way we started with the invitations, with the instructions, the first couple of days, Bhante and myself, oh, it was really different. It wasn't the usual bring someone up, feel metta for them, say the phrases. Oh, this has been really different. It's kind of like, oh, gently getting into or bringing up the awareness, imbuing awareness with metta, the body, awareness, metta, inside, outside. It's like, wow, it's kind of gentle and different. So yes, we have started a slightly different way. And some of you have also commented, oh, this is more gentle. This is more easeful. It's less work somehow compared to bringing up the categories, and which is lovely practice. I love it. And it seems like it's less work. And have even called it revolutionary. Wow, it feels different in my practice. It's easier. It feels so great. Great for those of you who are really taking to this as fish to water. Fantastic. Let yourself swim with ease in the waters, in the waters. Let every cell of your body be imbued with this sense of metta. Your cup be filled, your body, your heart, and then for it to shine out, for it to fill others' cups. And it does that. It will do that. One person shared in practice meeting this morning, and I asked them if it was okay to share it publicly. They said, you know, I've been doing metta for myself the past couple of days. And yet, as I interact with the people in my family, I realize I'm nicer to them. I'm kinder to them, even though I've been doing metta for myself. Now, isn't that interesting? Yay! That's how it works. So I wanted to share that because that is lovely. It's such a beautiful insight to notice that, we're doing metta for ourselves, and yet it permeates. We become kinder, gentler, more metta-filled to others. So it naturally happens that way. When it flows on its own, we don't have to force it even. It happens on its own, in its own time, in its own right. So awareness imbued with metta, awareness imbued with metta, internally, externally. And as that becomes the starting foundation, the starting place for our practice, now, as Bhante invited us this morning, to expand the circles, the concentric circles, invite our benefactor, our good friend, the easy category. Now see, as your awareness is imbued with metta, as you start from there, how this category might actually feel easier, more natural. It's not so much like now you have to pump up metta for this. Like, oh, it's already there. It's like, it can kind of flow. May you be well. May you be with ease. This traditional way of practicing of again bringing up the image, the felt sense of the person, feeling what comes up in your heart. The second pillar of practice, and the third pillar being the phrases. If it works for you, you don't have to use the phrases. But again, let me repeat the three pillars, bringing up the image, felt sense, and based on that, seeing what comes up in you, the feeling of metta, warmth, care, and flowing out of this, the second pillar, the phrases can flow out of this naturally, or just stay with the two pillars. Now, this being kind of the three pillars of metta practice now, with if the awareness is already imbued with care, metta, warmth, see how it might feel more easeful. Maybe experiment. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. Be curious about it. See what happens. See what happens. Might be, it might, just might feel a little different. And of course, you can always go back to yourself, fill your own cup anytime throughout this retreat. You are welcome to stay with yourself. Go back to yourself. The self category is so important. You have absolute license, permission, invitation, please, to always feel comfortable going back and forth, the different categories, yourself, others, etc. Metta, metta and wisdom. Wisdom. So metta and wisdom are intertwined. They cannot be separate, really. They can't be separate. They cannot possibly be separate practices. We need awareness, we need understanding, we need knowing, we need to know and see in order to bring in metta and feel the metta with the knowing. So there needs to be wisdom, there needs to be understanding. And I'll also say for perhaps just a technical note as a footnote for those who are fans of Abhidhamma. In the mind moments, in the mind, in the practice of, in the way Abhidhamma explains reality and mind moments, there are these mental factors in each moment, lots of mental factors. But when you, the moment of metta, there is sati. There is sati and metta, sati, mindfulness, awareness, as well as metta together. They're always together present. So I'll just drop that as a footnote in small font. Also, metta and wisdom, as we've been inviting you to sit with, and also in the extent of practice, extent of practices, there is when we practice wisdom practices. And our hearts and minds open up to emptiness, as I've mentioned before. Compassion, love arises. They're together. Love and emptiness, love and wisdom, really at the outset, as the extent of experience, when the mind opens up, when the heart opens up, they're not separate. And similarly, when one practices metta and these beautiful Brahma Viharas, these practices of the heart, the practices of liberation through the beautiful the mind liberate, becoming liberated through these beautiful qualities of love. The Brahmavihara is all different aspects of love. And knowledges arise after, through perfection of love, through perfection of love. So they're really intertwined in so many ways, in so many ways. And also in practices of the unfolding of the knowledges. So as we practice more and more diligently, and in some stages of practice, when it feels like the rug has been pulled out of under our feet, when the sense of impermanence, what's called the three characteristics, become really, really prominent when we're doing wisdom practices, Vipassana specifically, when these knowledges unfold. And again, it feels like the rug has been pulled in the sense of, everything is impermanent, everything not satisfactory, and there is no self. We need to have air in our tires because the road can become pretty rough. So we need to have air in our tires. And air in our tires is metta, as I was saying earlier. Air in our tires is metta. We can, through wisdom, we can kind of bike hard through like effort, and we're biking here and there. But if we don't have air in our tires, it's a really rough ride, as Joseph Goldstein likes to say. Wisdom without compassion is like a bicycle without air in its tires. So we need to put air in our tires with whatever stage of practice we're at, So I'm just delineating, at any stage, this stage, that stage, wherever we are, we need metta. It's intertwined. It's really intertwined with the practice. So it's not so much that we do it as a separate practice. Many of us are used to doing it for 5 minutes at the beginning, 5 minutes at the end. But again, this way that we've introduced to imbue awareness, to imbue knowing, to imbue mindfulness with metta is more supportive, is what hearts and minds will open up to anyway at the extensions of practice. So we might as well start there, because that's where we're going to end up anyway. So we might as well start there. I hope this makes sense, what I'm pointing out here. I see some nods. Okay, I'm heartened. Okay. And as Bhante also was talking about the self, knowing the self, it's so important to know the self, to know the self, to love the self before we can possibly let go of the self. We really need to know the self and love the self. We cannot let go of the self and stop selfing before we have really known the self, loved the self, understood the self. Oh, sweet self. Oh, because if we try to get rid of it too quickly, it won't really work. It just doesn't work. Oh. So spending time to know the self and really love the self at every stage of practice, and especially when it gets to more challenging parts of unfoldings, we really need to have loved the self, known the self, so that the self can say, okay, thank you, it's okay. Maybe not quite needed here. But really, really taking the time to know the self, love the self. Completely. 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 Oh, this dear being, this poor dear being who thinks is running the whole show and has control over everything and suffers. Oh, does it suffer? To love this being that is us. And take joy in its joys. Celebrate. And also hold it with kindness and compassion. And touching in, as Bhante was beautifully talking about the quote unquote hindrances yesterday. We usually bring that up on the second day of retreat. Because that's usually when enough settling has happened and these challenges become more known. So almost like the second evening of a retreat, obligatory talk is touching at some point into the hindrances, and yet to consider them, as Bhante was talking about, not as problems, but as the ways to really know the self, love the self. And it's the covering, it's the covering that covers the path. Each of us have different habitual visitors and see, oh, that's the path and that's the way to go. And it's not like, oh, you go away, you quote unquote covering, I want to practice. No, actually, this is the path. This is the practice, whatever it is. And for each of us, it's going to be different. That is the practice, to have love, to have care, to have patience with whatever keeps coming up. It's your teacher. The hindrances are your best teachers. They're not an accident. Metta and wisdom. Metta and wisdom. So another reflection that I want to share with you about the intertwined nature of metta with every aspect of practice that we actually do is the threefold nature of the path. Sila, Samadhi, Panya. Sila, Samadhi, Panya. The three aspects. Sila as the ethics, as virtue, as cultivation, moral cultivation, or just simply as non-harming, not harming ourselves, not harming others, as we stepped into the first evening. So sila, samadhi, often translated as concentration, as the mind settling, stability, the states of calm abiding, the mind really settling, absorption, jhanas, all of this as support for the path. Samadhi, concentration, calm abiding. And panya translated as wisdom practices. So sometimes people, perhaps this may not have come up for you, but okay, I'll bring up the question for you. Wait a minute, where's metta? Sila, samadhi, panya. Those are the three main pillars of practice. Where is metta? So here's what I like to invite for your consideration. If these were Sila Samadhi Panya, if they were the three legs of a stool, three-legged stool, wooden stool. Metta is the wood. Metta is the wood. Metta is in all three of these. And you ask, how so? So with sila, non-harming, non-harming. So consider with love, with care. It is intertwined with non-harming. When we love ourselves, when we love others, we offer them safety. We don't want to harm, right? Or when we offer safety, when we aren't harming, is an act of love, is an act of care for ourselves to stop harming ourselves, to stop calling ourselves, fill in the terrible names we call ourselves. It's an act of non-harming. As I brought in the first night with why speech, how do we talk with to ourselves? Sila, the fourth precept. So you see metta, kindness, love, and different aspects of morality, offering non-harming to ourselves and others are intertwined of the same fabric. It's the wood. It's there already. Okay. So now, where is metta in samadhi? Where is it? How does it relate? Well, two different ways. Metta supports samadhi. Through metta, we actually establish samadhi concentration. Let me explain. So again, they're completely intertwined. So metta supports concentration, samadhi, this sense of care, warmth, love, ease, gentleness. When there is a sense of gentleness and ease, care, love, relaxation, the mind, the heart can relax into states of samadhi. I can't tell you how many yogis I have seen who have efforted, I want to get concentrated, and how they have suffered, how much suffering there can be with just wanting to get concentrated, wanting to get jhanas, wanting to get, ouch, 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 my heart hurts. And instead, relaxing, letting there be kindness, metta, warmth. You can't force a baby to sleep. Okay, now fall asleep now. It just doesn't work. And concentration is like falling asleep. It's like, oh, sweetie, I love you. It's okay. It's okay. Gentle, kind. And the baby falls asleep. You're the baby. Gentle, kind. The mind settles into sweetness of calm abiding, sweetness of absorption. So it's already there. And also, on the other side of the coin, metta practices, metta, all the Brahmaviharas are actually samatha practices. There are concentration practices. When you keep coming back to the object of may I be well, may I be well, you know, same, even without phrases, but when you keep coming back, yourself, others keep coming back. Guess what? The mind gets really stable, calm, concentrated. And there are jhanas, deep states of absorption, for every single Brahma Vihara. So it's one and this, they support each other. Okay, so that's the second leg of the stool. Sila, Samadhi, Panya, wisdom. And wisdom I've been talking about all along, right? Wisdom and metta, love and metta, they are intertwined. They support each other. Putting air in your tires. You need air in your tires. You need metta for wisdom to arise and to continue to develop and deepen and really flourish and flower. And also without wisdom, you can't, without knowing, understanding, clarity, it can't really be wholehearted metta. But also another aspect that wisdom really supports metta is with wisdom, there is a sense of understanding, seeing causes and conditions also. For example, when we're unkind to each other, blaming each other, oh, it's all my fault. We're not. Oh, and that blocks metta. You can't have metta for yourself, acceptance for yourself. And say, it's all my fault. I screwed up. I'm a terrible person. And then when you actually allow wisdom to arise, wait a minute. There's so many causes and conditions that led to this event, this decision, this thing. It's crazy to think, to put it all on my shoulders. So many causes and conditions, so many of them above and beyond my control. I had this much control. And yes, maybe I could have done better. I'm going to learn from it. But so many things, historical, genetic, other people, their psychology, my human evolutionary ways I behave that I don't even know. Can't even control. I get primed. Like all of those. So wisdom can actually then open the door for metta in this way. Can open the door for metta. And to say also wisdom and metta, wisdom and all the Brahma Viharas are intertwined again, because metta or compassion or any of the other ones without wisdom can actually not be beneficial, can be harmful. So Tibetans have this phrase, idiot compassion. So idiot compassion is when there is no metta, when there is no wisdom, sorry, when there is no wisdom. It's like, oh yeah, it's all okay. You can walk over me. It's all right. So there's no wisdom. There's no wisdom. So we want to have wisdom as a part of our love, as a part of our care, as a part of our compassion. Because sometimes actually love can look quite fierce. You know, with a child who is about to hurt themselves and touch the stove, you don't go, oh, it's okay, you can touch the stove, or you can have the whole gallon of ice cream because I love you, it's okay. That's idiot love, right? It doesn't have wisdom in it. You want to have wisdom. So a loving and wise response would be, no, I love you. You can't hurt yourself. You can't eat that gallon of ice cream. No. Darling, no, I love you. Or the same way for us. We love ourselves so much to say, no, you can't hurt me. I love you. I love me. And this is not okay. This is not okay. Not out of aversion, not out of hatred, not out of hatred, but out of love for everyone. This is what is needed right now. This is what is needed right now. So wisdom. With love, with compassion. This is so in the Western parlance, maybe psychologists call that boundaries, not the sense of you're not putting up walls though. So that's why kind of boundaries, I don't like that sense, but it's a sense of it's not a wall. It's just kind of a loving, like, this is what's appropriate. I love you. I love me. And out of wisdom, this is okay. This is not okay. Again, not out of hatred, not out of anger towards the other, but towards love for yourself and towards them. So wisdom plus love, intertwined. So the third leg of the stool. So Sila Samadhi Panya. Who knew? Metta is there all the way throughout. Inseparable. The wood. Can't be otherwise. So I would like to turn. Oh yeah, I wanted to say one more thing about wisdom and love. And that is also wise. What is wise to accept? Yes. And also another way. Yeah, this is another thing I wanted to mention. That is, as I'll talk about all the Brahma Viharas in a moment, just so that many of you know this territory already. For some of you, it might be somewhat new or new completely, and yet, as I like to invite us all to listen with beginner's mind, including myself. That actually, the four Brahma Viharas, first one, metta, loving kindness, which is the primary one in this tradition, in the Theravada tradition. Second one, being compassion. Karuna. The third one being vicarious joy, sympathetic joy, different ways it's translated. Happiness for other people's happiness. Mudita. And the fourth one, equanimity, equipoise, upekkha. Actually, I'll just say this now, that the fourth one, upekkha, equanimity, is a wisdom factor. Equanimity, equipoise, serves as the balance, serves as the stable bedrock that all the other Brahma Viharas sit on, just the way the Buddha in the image behind me sits on this stable bedrock, like the sense of stability. So too, all the Brahma Viharas, all the other three, sit on equanimity. And also we'll see how equanimity is a Brahma Vihara itself in a moment. But, and equanimity, equipoise, neither falling into nor attaching, wanting, nor pushing away with aversion. There is so much wisdom in that. There is so much wisdom in this equipoise. Equanimity, as the crown jewel of Buddhist practice, actually is interconnected, interwoven with all the Brahma Viharas, which is the wisdom factor. So many beautiful connections, interconnections here with wisdom and love, really, that I want to point out. So the Brahma Viharas. So Brahma Viharas, Brahma, translated as heavenly or gods, Vihara as home, abode, dwelling. So Brahma Viharas, the dwellings of the gods, heavenly dwellings. So for years, I thought as heavenly dwellings, as oh yeah, heavenly dwellings, yes, some kind of practice, heavenly dwellings. It really became clear for me years ago when I was, I dedicated a year of my practice a long time ago to the Brahma Viharas, and also did long retreat, just doing Brahma Viharas. And then it became clear, oh, it's not about some heavenly dwelling, some heaven out there. No, these teachings are about feeling as if I'm living in a heavenly abode right here on this plane of existence as a human being. Just so much joy, so much happiness, so much gratitude, grace. It just like it felt like I was in heaven, heaven on earth. That those are the words that came up for me, especially while I was on retreat. Like, wow, I feel like I'm in heaven. That retreat. If this is as good as this is as good as it gets in this human realm, just being in the Brahma Viharas, immersed in them, the mind infused with love and compassion and joy and gratitude and equanimity. It's like, oh my goodness, that heaven on earth. So that's how I invite you to consider Brahma Viharas. This is heaven on earth. This is heavenly adobe. It's not for others. It's not for somebody else. Like, this is it. We can step into it. This is available. These are the teachings available. And we can step into it for a few minutes or longer. And also through daily practice, it becomes more and more accessible. It's occurred to me that so for the past year, ever since the pandemic, Diana Clark and myself have been offering Happy Hour. Many of you are familiar, many of you are regulars in Happy Hour. And we actually switched to teaching. We started it 4 years ago. It was once a week. And we started a year ago. It's now offered every day of the week. So I teach every other day of these Brahma Viharas, these practices of the heart. And so I practice them. And it's been another period of stepping into this heavenly dwellings, every day. It's part, my mind, my heart swims in them. And it's wonderful. It's delicious. I invite you all to join us if you wish, if your time and schedule allows, but really it's available. It's right here. It's right here, right now. It's available. It's heaven on earth. And it's not as a way to escape. It's not as a way, it's not a drug that we take to check out. Not at all. What this actually allows us, these Brahma Viharas allow us, What they allow us is to actually have more capacity to face, to hold all the suffering in the world, ours and others included. It's not about checking out. It's not about turning away. When you are resourced, when you're refreshed, when you have space in your heart, it's about being resourced. When you've just come out of the castle or have been dwelling in this castle of Brahma Viharas, heavenly, you have so much space to hold your own suffering, to be available for it, to be available for other people's suffering, instead of being so under-resourced. You know, you have so many chambers, so many rooms in our heart. No, if we've chosen to live in the dungeon, in the basement, where there is no light and it's cold and it's damp and it's really, then somebody says, oh, I'm suffering. It's like, oh, get away from me. Like, I have enough I'm dealing with. But if you've been residing in the room of your heart that's a castle, like, then you can let people in with you. And let your own sorrows and challenges when they come, when your own pain and suffering. It's okay. It's okay, darling. Come sit with me, have tea. There's plenty of space for us in this room, in this heavenly abode. So So the four Brahmaviharas, heavenly abodes, heaven on earth. So the first one, metta, as we've been practicing, as a sense of kindness, warmth, friendliness, goodwill. There's so many different ways it can show up. And to consider in terms of the relationship that metta, this kindness of the heart, this goodwill, friendliness, meets the object, the being who is in neutral place, either yourself or others. So when I say object, I mean a person. I'm kind of using a little bit of classical language. The object being yourself, others, who's in a neutral place. May you be safe, may you be happy, may you be well, etc., etc. So now the same metta, the same friendliness, the same goodwill, just the same way, the same warmth. When it comes in contact with a being who is suffering, and that being either yourself or others, that being suffering, then metta expresses itself as compassion. So metta is compassion that holds suffering. It's also been said that compassion is the love child of metta and suffering. So the metta, friendliness, meeting suffering, it gets expressed as compassion. It holds the suffering. It holds the suffering. Now the same metta, same goodwill, same friendliness, same care, if it comes in contact with someone who's doing really well, either yourself or others, it expresses itself as mudita, as vicarious joy. You care for them. Yay, I am so happy that you're happy. May your happiness continue. May it never end. And if it's yourself, it becomes gratitude. Yay, I'm so happy you're happy. I'm so grateful. It becomes gratitude naturally. When you become happy for your own happiness, it expresses itself as gratitude. Now, upekka, the fourth one, you can think of it in different ways. One is, as I mentioned, as a wisdom practice, as the foundation for all these other practices. Because if there is no wisdom, if there is no balancing factor for the Brahmaviharas, they will fall into their far or near enemy. And I'll come back to upekka in a moment, but let me talk about the first three, about their far and near enemies, just so that you recognize them. So with metta, the far enemy, so the far enemy, this is classical language, you can think of far enemy as the opposite. So the opposite of metta is hatred, ill will, easy to recognize. The near enemy is the masquerader, is what masquerades as metta, but it isn't quite metta. So it takes a little more wisdom to recognize it. So the near enemy of metta is love with attachment. With attachment to outcome. Either, oh, I love you so that you love me back, or I love myself, I'm going to give myself metta so that all my suffering will just go away right now at once, or I'm going to send you metta so that you'll be happy and I'll call you at the end of the retreat and say, okay, are you happier now? I did metta for you, I'll retreat. So attachment to outcome. That attachment is the near enemy. You see how it kind of masquerades? You got to kind of see it and be aware of it. So that's the masquerader. Love with attachment, with strings attached, any kinds of strings attached. So for compassion, the opposite, the far enemy is cruelty. And that's kind of obvious, right? Cruelty. So I won't say so much about it. It's the absolute opposite of compassion. When somebody is hurting already, and ouch, there's this cruelty to inflict pain. And the the near enemy again, the masquerader. There are multiple ones here. One is pity, like, oh, poor you, or poor me, which is not quite compassion. Compassion is strong, has wisdom, has love with it, and holds the suffering instead of kind of sinking into it. And now for others, the sense of pity can come like, oh, poor you, that would never happen to me. Oh, poor you, I wish you freedom from this suffering, but that would never happen to me. So compassion actually doesn't have this, oh, you're down here suffering and I'm up here. It's actually like, just like me, you suffer just like me. This could be me. This may be me. There is no difference between you and I. I hold your suffering. I care for you as if it were my own. May you be free from it. So that's one near enemy. And again, if you fall into these far and near enemies, these masqueraders, it's okay. You haven't committed a sin. You're just noticing. You're just tuning your practice. It's perfectly fine. Just recognize them with wisdom and practice with them. It's not a problem. As Bhante said, nothing is a problem here. Don't make it into a problem. It's just opportunities for learning and tuning. Another near enemy or masquerader of compassion is sympathetic distress or empathetic distress when we fall into the pain so much that the metta is gone. We're just suffering, either with our own suffering, just painful, or just the suffering of others, just suffering. It's so hard. And that's actually what most people think of compassion. That's where it's like, I can't feel compassionate. It's just too much. It's actually what people think of compassion fatigue. There is no such a thing as compassion fatigue. It's empathetic distress fatigue. When you fall into empathetic distress, and of course it's exhausting. It's exhausting. So what attenuates that? What supports us not falling into it? Or if you fall out of it, to know how to come back to balance is first notice it with wisdom. Oh yeah, this is what's happening. Okay. And then bring in warmth, bring in metta, bring in love to hold it. The sense of care balances the suffering, balances the suffering. The suffering alone can be heavy and painful, but actually the love balances, and actually practice of compassion feels good. It's a heavenly abode. It feels lovely to practice compassion. There's a sense of generosity and loveliness to care for the suffering of another person and hold it with love. It feels lovely. It's as if we are staying present, supporting the other person with our presence. We're not turning away. And there's enough stability, strength to be there for their pain and sorrow, theirs or ours. There's a sense of empowerment. So the weakness or weepiness in it. So just be aware of the masquerader as the near enemy, as this one tends to arise a lot with practicing compassion. You might have seen it yourself. So it's all good. So now with upekkha, equanimity. The word upekkha, in Pali, to see, to oversee, to have an overview, a bird's eye perspective, not to be caught in small sense perspectives, but to have a view. And as I was saying earlier, the view could be the sense of perspective of all the causes and conditions. There is so much more, past, present, future, all beings, and this being is a part of so many beings. So upekkha, equanimity, bird's eye view, to see, to overview. So The two ways we can think of upekkha, as I mentioned, one is the bedrock that holds all things with caring stability. So not just the other Brahmaviharas, but it cares. It actually holds all things, everything that arises and passes, with caring stability. It's not aloof. It's not caring. Caring stability. That's why it's part of the Brahmaviharas. That's why it's part of the Brahma, because it cares. Equanimity cares. There is a caring, a warmth, a sense of, if I didn't care, I wouldn't be here. One example I like to bring up for people to kind of feel into this sense is, you know, if you're sitting at the deathbed of someone you love and you care for, and there's nothing that can be done, and you're sitting at their deathbed, and you're holding presence, caring. If you didn't care, you wouldn't be there. You would turn away, but you care. You love so much. You care. You're there. And yet you know that what needs to happen, just bird's eye view, holding. It's the bedrock that holds all things with caring stability. Okay. So the far enemy of equanimity, the opposite of equanimity, is either falling into, either grabbing, attaching, wanting, like, oh, want it, or pushing it away, aversion. So both are the opposite of equanimity, equipoise, which is just balanced, arising and passing, factor of wisdom. The near enemy, the masquerader, is more nuanced, of course, such as the other ones. Oh, wait, did I skip mudita? I did. I'll go back to mudita. Yes, I did skip it. Oh, I'll go back. Maybe that's the one to end this talk with. That's great. I'll go back to mudita. So the masquerader for equanimity is aloofness and detachment. It's like, it is what it is, but it's not with the sense of it is what it is, acceptance, holding presence. It is what it is. I accept what is. It's like, it is what it is, whatever. That's not equanimity. That's aloofness. That's an unhealthy sense of detachment. In fact, I usually, for just a linguistic note, lack of attachment, not being attached, not being, not grabbing, not clinging, unclinging is different from detachment. Detachment to me, in my use of language, is kind of being detached. Whereas lack of clinging is what I like to use for, I think some people call it the detachment. So just wanted to make that separation. And if it's useful for you to offer that for you, to separate that out in your own feelings, in your own exploration. So not clinging, unclinging is different from detachment. All right, let's go back to mudita. So mudita, the far enemy of mudita is envy, when we are practicing for a dear being and then, we actually really want what they're having. May you be happy. First it's like, may your good fortune increase, may it never end. Our heart is beaming with happiness for them, happy that you're happy. And then it kind of collapses into envy. Ouch. So the far enemy, the opposite, is easy to recognize. And if that should happen, but with any of these, by the way, any of these, feel free to turn to your own self in this moment, because you're the one who's hurting in that moment with envy. Envy is painful. It's really painful. So can turn your love. So love that was expressed as vicarious joy in a moment for another person, mudita, turn that love to yourself, to your own suffering, and let it be expressed as self-compassion. So So you see, it's all the same love. It just kind of like there wears different kind, colors of glove, right? In different situations. And the near enemy, the masquerader of mudita, there are a couple of ones here. One is pride, in sense of in the way of, say it's your child, for example, who's just had a great success, or the team has won, your team has won. Yes, my child, my team, kind of like kind of selfing. A lot of selfing arises. It's not just happy, it's not just generous happiness for their happiness. You're not just giving it away anymore. You're kind of taking ownership of it. It's becoming yours. So that's a nuance of it. So it's a masquerader. These masqueraders can be a little tricky. So see that. Another masquerader is actually exuberance. Exuberance is like, whoa, one gets so high, so happy for the other person's happiness. That's just like that balance of equanimity is gone. You've fallen into it. It's just bubbly. You feel drunk. And it just, it can kind of get a headache, actually. It's so that's the other best masquerader for mudita, exuberance. So to say that, you know, in your practice, you might have seen these other conditions arise, happiness, a good well-being of another, suffering of another, need for more equanimity, when also equanimity can be practiced when there is so much suffering. Metta comes in contact with overwhelming suffering, that compassion says, okay, equanimity, come, let's just hold it. Let's just hold this. It's so sometimes it can be skillful in those times to practice equanimity with overwhelming suffering too. So just to say, in your practice, you might see all these other different nuances arise, and it's okay. It's all love expressed in different ways for different categories, different conditions. And at any point, if you see yourself suffering, any moment, turn the love to yourself. Holding with self-compassion. So many words, so much I like to share, and no need, because you will discover all of this on your own. So I hope this has been supportive and helpful as some map for this territory. Thank you all for your kind and wise attention. May all beings, including ourselves, may all beings be happy. May all beings, including ourselves, be free. Thank you. Enjoy your walking period, letting the words percolate through.